We're back in open session for the board. If you would please identify yourself for the board.
Dr. Bob Noon.
Thank you, Dr. Noon. What would you, what statement would you like to make?
First of all, I'll ask to answer any questions you have. I was down here several months ago. I'm going to try to be brief. Think of me as Henry VIII on his wedding to Anne Boleyn. I won't keep you long. Anyway, starting with the attorney, via FOIA, I requested any documentation from the civil engineer. He said everything was done verbally. Bold place lie. Two, there's anti-project and post-project photographs showing the deepest flooding before the project. And there's a concrete block wall just off my property that can be used as a yardstick. And you can see where the flood, what you call flooding is a very elastic term. It's 6 inches or so. And post-project, you can see it's 24 inches higher. Those photographs were in the city's or the town's possession. When they told me they were going to do the plans, do the project, there was no drainage off of my property onto this, into this, canal. And I looked at the project and I said, got the engineers, the town engineer to my property, and I said, you've got to provide this amount of drainage. It's approximately 20 feet wide on a good rain, 6 inches deep, and then I saw it form. We can do the math in our head, okay? Then I see the thing form, and it's got an 18-inch pipe. It's totally inadequate, plus it'll block. The concrete truck could have been, it was a couple of hundred feet away. We could have put a board over it and not poured the section and corrected it right then. No, it happened. Then it was demonstrated twice during construction where it could have been cut out and corrected. Finally, after litigation, etc., and all this, it's corrected similar to what I suggested in the first place. I've got half an engineering degree. My son's a civil engineer. All my cousins are engineers. I'm sure Mr. Welton is the only engineer in Arizona that could come up with these conclusions. It's ridiculous. And that's...
That's what you wanted to say.
Any questions?
No, I appreciate you coming, Dr. Nunes. And I think, at least verbally, the respondent has agreed to the fact that there should have been more effort put into the work done. I think the technical skill issue is somewhat agreed to at this point.
I called him when I saw this document from the attorney, and I said, I called him, and he never returned my phone call, because I wanted to make sure he got all the information that could have been provided for him.
Thank you.
Thank
you. I'm sorry, unfortunately, some of that is a result of the litigation process, where everybody has to be very careful what they say, who they say it to, and it's absolutely unfortunate, But anyway. No, Dr. Nunes, we appreciate it.
Okay.
And
thank
we're
you very
definitely
much.
Taking it seriously.
Thank you.
Thank you, sir.
MAGA.
Okay.
I'm going to make a motion that we continue this item to next month to review Mr. Polk's red lines.
Okay.
Yeah.
I think we have a motion. Do we have a second?
Second.
Okay. And before we vote on the motion, though, I think it would be good to give staff some direction what they should be agreeing to on red lines and what they shouldn't agree to, if you're okay with that. So we got
I'd like the board to see them. That would be my suggestion, is that us as board members look at those.
Well, but one specific request already has been to remove the conclusion of law that the report should have been sealed. Well, does it make sense to bring it back if we don't discuss that and start over again? Either way, Jason, but
I haven't seen his proposal. I haven't seen Mr. Folks' proposal yet.
Well, but he verbally mentioned that he is asking to remove that finding or that conclusion of law.
Well, I can't get past looking at his proposal. I'd like to look at his proposal and
don't carry up. Comment from there.
Could I suggest the board could look at Mr. Folks' proposal and also look at an alternate consent agreement with some direction from you, and then that way you can see both and determine what final product you want.
Okay. Mm-hmm. I will state my opinion for staff consideration as mine only. I do think reading the statute and the fact that this was prepared for a litigation case and reading 62, that conclusion of law should stay. I was thinking something different early on, but after reading and having the executive session discussion, I believe that's my opinion. On the findings of fact, I'm not terribly opposed to adding some findings. I just want to make sure that they don't sound like excuses or reasoning for what occurred with the work. So that's my thinking. And I don't know if anybody has anything else they want to say to staff or Mr. Folker, just move it to next time. Anything else?
I just remembered when I spoke to Mr. Kramer earlier, he wasn't sure that whether this earlier drainage study was in the board's file. It is referenced in Mr. Welton's letter. It was an attachment to an email, and he told me today all of that was provided to the board. But I brought another copy along, and I'll hand it off to Mr. Kramer today, just so there's no uncertainty about what it was Mr. Welton was looking at in this earlier drainage report. So it's referenced in his written statement. He said he gave it to the board as an attachment to that letter. And just briefly on the interpretation of the rule again, when you look at those two subparts, D1 and D2, the conjunction between them is and, not or. And
again, so you could read it, Mr. Polka, saying that you can mark a draft, but then and, you also have to seal it, well, if it's for those purposes.
And I appreciate that, Dr. Angel. And I stated earlier why I think that would not be a wise reading of the rule by the board. So I'll leave it at that. Thank you.
Hey, Jason, you can kick me, but one last thing, just to both of your points, Mr. Nunes and Mr. Paul, about the flooding being, you know, you said Mr. Walton's report stated that we're solely focused on whether it made things worse, and he concluded that it didn't. I think that's a big question that he answered without any justification. So I don't think he answered it properly. And I think of Mr. Nunes' end is the same thing. Just because in a previous flood it was 6 inches and then it was 24, that depends on how big a rain event it was, you know, how big of an area, what's upstream. So all those things should be considered when rendering an opinion of whether the flooding was caused by the project. And I don't think it was done.
The other question I have on this is, and this is for staff or when you're doing the consent, why did we do state suspension and probation for 10 months? I didn't quite understand the time frame on that.
That's for giving a chance to pay the fine.
The time to pay the
fine. Right, I understand that, but what if he paid it the first day? Are we still keeping this state suspension for 10 months?
We could then remove it. Yeah, and no.
I mean, normally we don't do a time frame. I mean, we give him a time frame to pay. And basically, it's state suspension until such time that, you know, everything's been, you know, completed. But just the 10 months just seemed, I mean, it's just a little odd. We really never had that.
I think we actually, don't we do that every time? Whatever the, you know, compliance term is, that's how long the state suspension is.
I think it's state suspension and probation until the terms have been completed.
I can add that.
Or something. Look at past ones. I mean, I don't, you know, or until such time, or until, you know, the terms have been completed. It's like I said, I mean, yeah, he might take 10 months to pay it, but he might pay it in one day. And then is he going to be suspended for the whole time for no reason? It's just something to consider when you rewrite it.
Okay. I'll just give that up.
Thank you, Mr. Fulmer.
Is it the pending report?
No, that's the one that we were talking about. It's referenced in this one. Thank you.
Mr. Pope, is that it?
Thank you. How do I get it?
Those are the drawings, but this is a drainage report.
Yep, so we have a motion and a second to table this item until the next month, so we have a chance to see both the staff's consent and respondents' proposed consent. So all in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Okay, thank you. We are next going to move to 6H. Mr. Everode, 6H?
I'm good.
Okay, you're good?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
This is just so we finish all of Mr. Folk's cases. This is agenda item 6H1, case number P19009. Respondent is Lee Shaw of Lee Shaw Architecture. He is a non-registered architect, and the case is about whether he's been practicing architecture, or, excuse me, the investigation concluded that the respondent violated statutes in that he practiced or offered to practice a board profession without registration, advertised to indicate he's qualified to practice a board-regulated profession without board registration, and that respondent firm practiced or offered to practice without board registration. So we have an proposed consent agreement, which includes assurance of discontinuance. And I believe that's it. There's no additional cost of compliance or non-compliance, but there's no cost investigation or any other items. So that's what we have in front of us, and would you please identify yourselves?
Yes, good morning, Dr. Angel and members of the board. Douglas Folk of Clark Hill on behalf of Lee Shaw.
And I'm Lee Shaw, Lee Shaw Architecture.
Thank you, Mr. Shaw. Would you like to make a statement for the board? For consideration?
If I may, Dr. Angel, Mr. Shaw did address the board at the October meeting.
Okay.
Leading up to this matter. I've provided a written response on his behalf. And if I may, just to revisit this issue, we had requested that the board reconsider this matter because we concluded that we felt the direction to offer a consent order was not justified by law. And I'd like to remind the board of what's in the file, because again, the file determines the board's jurisdiction and the basis on which it acts. This complaint originated with an email from an architect in Tucson asking the investigation staff about people who list their businesses on house.com. Wanted to know why these people were listed as architects. What was the board going to do about it? The board corresponded with Mr. Shaw as one of the people on that list. He responded and explained fully what he does. He's a residential architect. He's an interior designer. He's a designer consulting with other registered architects. He has never held himself out as qualified to practice architecture or offering to practice architecture as regulated by this board. As the board knows, there's a statutory exemption where the legislature said residential architecture within certain parameters, you're not required to be registered. In fact, it says it's not subject to this chapter. So Mr. Shaw has been practicing in this area of exempt practice for his entire career. His website does not represent that he's a registered architect. The use of his the word architecture in his company name does not violate any statute of this board. It's not a legally protected term. And this is not the first time the board has heard this issue. I've been here for lengthy discussions about what the board regulates or does not regulate with respect to architecture. And the conclusion consistently has been, for exempt residential practice, the board does not regulate. And so our client is within this area of exempt practice. He's been very forthcoming with the board. His materials, his marketing materials, were very explicit and precise about what he does, and they're not misleading in any way. And bringing it back to Howes again, the only service providers who advertise on this site are people offering residential, architectural, or interior design services. It's not a place that consumers go to if they want an office building or a hospital or a church design. That's not the kind of people that advertise there. That's not how Mr. Shaw advertises his business there. So there's no risk of confusion to the public here. And I submit that there's really nothing in the board's file to suggest that he has ever attempted or offered to practice a board-regulated profession. So we respectfully decline to sign the consent order that's been proposed because, as written, it's asking him not to do the thing that he is legally permitted to do by statute, which is design houses and provide interior design services.
Thank you, Mr. Falk. And I think this is, at this time, a bigger question than it's been before. I think we need to think about this. I did want to ask you, understanding the exemption for residential architecture, do you think if the items were misleading, his representation to the public could be misleading, is that a violation? If that was the case.
If he was representing that he was a registered architect or offering to do things like commercial architecture, institutional, anything outside that realm of residential, then that gets us in the area of the statute dealing with registered practice. But he hasn't done that.
Well, the reason I ask is because if you go to the Lee Shaw Architecture site, it talks, I mean, if you click on projects, it shows multiple commercial projects. It shows the... it's here the Rio Nuevo Transit Center. It shows some cafes and other buildings in New Mexico.
Correct.
And after having looked through the website several times, I understand that he's got several associations, but these are all under the Lee Shaw Architecture website. If I went and saw that every project he shows in here is a house, it'd be one thing, but I see a lot of non-residential projects on the website and on the description of, you know, his career, as well as, you know, there's another person, Benjamin Vogel, who's the principal architect. Is he registered?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, with respect to each of those projects, Dr. Angel, Mr. Shaw identifies his role as designer. He identifies that there was a licensed architect responsible for the commercial work. And we offered to provide the board with copies of not only his contracts, but the professional documents for those projects so that the board could confirm that. And we weren't asked to provide any additional information after he made his initial written response. So, I mean, again, there's nothing to hide here. He's done a lot of things. He has worked with registered architects, but he's always stayed on the right side of that line to do interiors design or design consulting. And the registered architect was hired independently by the client on that project. So the restaurant or the station that you're talking about, those are all projects in which the registrar is hired by the client to prepare the sealed architectural drawings that were required. And that would be the case anytime there's a requirement. I mean, there's, as you're aware, there's jurisdictions that may require a registrant seal on house drawings even though it's exempt practice. If that came up in Mr. Shaw's practice, he had a registrant prepare those drawings for submission to the permit.
I understand his nuisance, but the website doesn't say anything about being a sub to an architect. I mean, it says Lee and Rick Ansaldi have designed historically inspiring contemporary haciendas, Rio Nuevo Transit Center. And if you go to the project site, all you see is pictures. It doesn't say, you know, design under, you know, or subconsultant to this. Mm-hmm. None of that is in there. I personally think it could be misleading to the public, and the easiest thing to do would be to not, if all he does is residential architecture, there's no reason he should have those projects in there. I mean, what does a transit center have to do with residential architecture?
We were asked to design a transit center. We didn't do construction drawings or anything like that. It was coming up with a conceptual design for a potential transit center. So. And if we were given that project, obviously we would have worked with an architect of record because it's beyond our abilities to do that.
Well, conceptual design of transit centers seems well outside of residential architecture as well.
That's not still, yeah.
And that wasn't built. It was a conceptual drawing. So, and as stated, these projects are ones where the client hired Mr. Shaw independently for design consulting, hired the architect to do the working drawings and construction documents. So I want to be real clear there. This is not a situation where Mr. Shaw is hiring licensed architects to work with sub-consultants.
I understand, Mr. Polk. I'm just worried about the perception from the public and the understanding of the public that Mr. Shaw can do that work because of his website. And again, doing conceptual design for a transit center seems like the practice of architecture to me. Well, I'm not sure how that's exempt.
Well, I mean, that job in particular, we were asked by the developer to come up with some ideas because we were working on the restaurants in Albuquerque. And they wanted to bring our client from Albuquerque, Flying Star Cafe and Satellite Coffee. They wanted them to be in Tucson. And so we basically just came up with some conceptual designs for them to put in their big proposal for this West Congress parcel west of downtown. So I was one, my partner and I were one of many on this team just as a design consultant.
And again, you're talking about a spectrum here in terms of services with retail and restaurant and hospitality projects. You have branding considerations, you have theme development. There are a lot of consultants out there that provide recommendations on those subjects. They're not architects.
Right.
The architects are doing the construction documents for those projects. So, I don't think that it's fair to single out Mr. Shaw for doing things that other branding consultants or retail consultants are doing to develop a look for a project. They're not practicing architecture to develop documents for submission for a permit for construction.
The website says he designed the transit center.
It does.
Okay. So, and I'll leave it at that. So my concern, what I would simply ask is that the website be clear and remove projects that are not within his scope of practice. The name of the business to me is a different discussion. So, and I'll open it up because I don't want to take over the meeting if anybody else has other stuff to talk about.
Is it okay to say design consultant? If you
sure.
Like on the transit
change
center.
The wording. Yeah, I understand.
Well, if the argument is that he's practicing residential architecture, why should those projects be there? Unless they're very clearly explain what your role was.
Well, I said residential architecture, interior design, and design consulting.
Okay.
So this board does not regulate interior design.
Right, but that's not what the website says. It doesn't say he did interior design for the transit center. It says he designed the transit center.
Well, okay. I should choose better wording. It's a conceptual design. It's not construction documents or anything like that. It's just a design to put into a portfolio for the developer. So, that's all.
Is there any input from anyone on the board or thoughts?
I'm inclined to dismiss this, but I'm not in a motion yet. I'm just trying to get a feeling from everybody else. But I
personally have no problem with the way it is. I mean, if it's a Lee Shaw architect is his name, that would be an issue. But architecture, and I know I've said this before, is architecture of buildings and stuff like that. I mean, anything can be architecture. And I don't see the pictures on the website being, that big of a deal either. Could it maybe be worded a little different? Maybe, but, I don't see any public harm or anything with this. I think they're getting what they got, and if the public called and asked him, I believe he would tell him, I don't do that, or he'd work with, he obviously works with a registered architect, so, for some of these things too. I agree with Mr. Poos. I believe this should be dismissed, but
I agree.
agree with that.
You know, my only question is going back to the, I don't have it in front of me, but 32101 provides the list of definitions, and does in the list of definitions for the word architecture imply architect, the practice by architects, or is architecture, as we're stating, of such a broad, generic, neutral term that it does not have any such
software architecture?
Architectural practice is any professional service or creative work requiring architectural education, training, and experience, the application of mathematical and physical sciences and principles of architecture and architectural engineering to such professional services or creative work as consultation, evaluation, design, and review of construction for conformance with contract documents and design in connection with any building planning or site development. Person shall be deemed to practice or offer to practice architecture who in any manner represents that the person is an architect or is able to perform any architectural service or other services recognized by educational authorities or architecture.
Yeah, I think the definitions from earlier that were brought up seem to kind of cover that, don't they? Am I missing something?
Okay. It's a broad enough term to encompass both work by non-registrants and registrants.
Okay. I just wanted to be sure that there wasn't any implied contradiction within our regulations for the use of the term architecture. It does not imply that it's a regulated practice. It can encompass unregulated practice as well.
I've sat down at the other end of the table years ago, and I don't know what the makeup of the board was, but in the past, the board has precluded residential designers from using the word architecture in their name. I disagree with that.
Right.
But the history, it's an issue that has required a bit of discussion.
Mm-hmm.
So,
yeah.
I understand the distinction between what Mr. Folk was arguing about the word versus public perception. And I appreciate what you're saying. I do wonder if there's a way to add something to some of the things on the website.
That's what I'm trying to get at. I'm not even sure the name of the business is architecture, because I think that's a big discussion, especially in light of the Oregon case, you know, which you have in your packet about, you know, not being able to regulate the title engineer because it means a lot of things. By the same token, architect and architecture could mean a lot of things. But I think the website is misleading to the public, and that's what I would like to see cleaned up. So, with that said, I think if there is...
Carmen, did you
have something?
I would agree with you. If the website seems a little misleading, that's obviously not your intention, but maybe a letter, I don't know if this is a possibility, but a letter stating some concern about the website, make it more clear, asterisk says, you know, registered by others, I don't know, something...
I'm not hearing anything firm here about the respondent doing anything wrong, right? Breaking the law, violating the law, breaking the rules. I mean, I'm not hearing anything strong. I know everybody's feelings.
You know what, guys? I'm really, don't shoot me, Mr. Don, but I'm really annoyed by this other person that's turning our colleagues in. I think Mr. Shaw has a stellar career. I don't think he's done anything wrong here. I think he's smart enough to know if he needs to go to his website and change some things, he'll do it.
So is that just your motion?
Yeah, I make a motion to dismiss this case.
I second.
Okay, so we have a motion and a second to dismiss. Any other items?
Just
for discussion?
Well, are we dropping the issue regarding clarity on his website?
If we dismiss, we can't require him to do anything. We can encourage him, because I think, as I said, if I'm a member of the public and I end up in, and I need an architect, and I end up in Lee Shaw Architecture, and I see the work and all the other stuff, I would assume that he's an architect, and they provide architectural services.
Yeah, my confusion, if you bear with me for a moment, is that in the title of a company bearing the term engineering, we have a very strict interpretation that implies that the entity, whether it's a PC, LLC, or an Inc., has a principal who is a licensed engineer. That's implied. I mean, so if, I guess it's not translatable to architecture. At least your architecture has no implied principal who is a registered architect. So that's what's a little confounding to me. I'm just making my point here. So at a minimum, in order to clarify it for the public, I think we should try to address any ambiguity. If he's working within the narrow band of the regulations that allow for residential architecture exclusion or exemption, well, then that should be clear in the website. That's it.
And I would rely on the counsel of Mr. Folt.
I think he's going to have to do that in good faith to acknowledge he's not an architect some way or clarify his website.
Every assumption I've heard here has been the pessimistic. It's been that he's going to do the wrong thing if he's asked. I'll offer the optimistic one. I'm going to call him up and say, design me a church, and he's going to say, I can't. Here's my architect, or do this or do that. So, I mean, if we're speculating,
we're going to be a design consultant, which is okay.
Yeah.
Glass half full, man.
Okay. Can I ask
that we put an item on the agenda for next month discussing the potentially the enforcement of the titles?
Yeah.
Okay.
That was the plan.
Okay.
Right. So we have a motion.
Okay, we have a motion and a second.
Thank you, Gene.
All in favor?
Aye.
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 Okay.
Any
nays?
Any
nays?
Well, Mr. Everett.
I'm going to be as trusting as Mr. Who says we should be. Thank you, gentlemen.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Yeah, what happened to you? What happened to the nation we know? Okay.
I just made it up.
Okay,
that's a concern.
We will go back to case 6, C5.
Which one?
6C5.
Excellent.
Agenda item 6C5, case number HI-19-11. Thomas Sullivan, home inspector, and this is about a home inspection in Spur Trail Court in Gulf Canyon. There was the case, let me just make sure I have the right case. The conclusion was that the firm registration was not current when a home inspection was done, despite the fact that they had advertised and that their registration was expired. They proposed consent is a letter of reprimand, $250 penalty, and the cost of investigation. So, would you please, sir, identify yourself for the board?
Hi, my name is Tom Sullivan. I'm the owner of Inspect 10 and licensed home inspector, and also a licensed real estate agent in Arizona. And I'd like to thank you, Mr. Chairman, and the board for the opportunity to come here and address everyone. And just like to make a few comments regarding this when it's appropriate.
You can. You were here already for a previous meeting, correct?
No,
for this case, you weren't here. Okay. But we had seen your. We saw the case. Was that in December? Was this case in the December agenda? Maybe we rescheduled because you couldn't attend. So, okay. So, yeah, we saw it at the December meeting, and at that meeting we lowered the penalty from $500 to $250.
Right.
Okay. Go ahead, Mr. Sullivan.
Okay. So initially, I received the letter and the consent order back. It was dated October 11th. 2018. I actually received it on the 16th, and within a day or so of that, called in and spoke with the inspector on this, and was told that I had an opportunity to come in and address the board. And so I wanted to go ahead and do that, but and I drafted a letter accordingly, dated October 18th, the same day that I spoke with the inspector, and just went through and mentioned that I thought that, considering that I've been a home inspector for almost 25 years, my company is in its 20th year as a home inspection company here in Arizona. This is the first violation that my company has ever had with the board regarding registration or anything like that. We've always been registered on time, etc. And so I sent my letter to the board and to the inspector stating that the next board meeting, which I was told I had an opportunity to be at, was going to be on Tuesday the 23rd, and I could not be prepared within one business day for the meeting. So I said, okay, well, that's certainly understandable. We'll go ahead and set you for the next one, which was that was for the December meeting. And the December meeting, I got a letter stating that I could be present for the December meeting, which was on December 18th. Just coincidentally, was my 66th birthday, but I was going to come and spend my birthday with the board that day. And so, as it turns out, you know, every cloud has a silver lining. It turns out that that was not the board meeting that day. The board had already met on December 11th, and so the investigator contacted me, let me know about all of that, and that at that particular board meeting, that the consent agreement or consent order had been modified to from $500 to $250 with $104 administrative investigative fee. And so I'm here today only to state that, yes, I know I was in violation. As soon as I was made aware of the violation, I corrected it immediately that same very day, and that I'm a member of ASHI for almost 25 years, the preeminent association for the home inspection business, and that I'm a member of various different associations, etc. I have never been in violation of registration on anything that I can think of, ever, except for this. And when I did bring that registration current, I asked them at the time, I don't remember who I spoke to, because I said, you know, I believe the reason that my registration is late is due to the fact that I did not receive the registration form in the mail. And so they looked back, they said, you know, no, there was no record of my receiving that in the mail or by email, either way, but that it was still my responsibility, which I don't disagree with. So I'm before the board today only to say that I have spent a number of hours, and I've scheduled my time for the board a couple of different times, and I would respectfully ask for the board to modify my consent order to reprimand only, considering that it is my first and only offense, and that I have operated in good faith, and I guess that's all I have to say.
Thank you, Mr. Sullivan. We certainly appreciate you taking the time to come here today and to call up on the case and help the investigators. Any thoughts from the board?
Well, Mr. Chairman, looking at the guideline matrix, I guess the lowest level of severity allows us the latitude of going down to a letter of concern. Am I reading that correctly?
We can do whatever we want.
We do it up to the maximum of $250, yes. Okay. So, yeah, I mean, given his history again, just for consideration with the board, we've already moved it down from 500 to 250 as to whether or not we really want to consider a letter of concern.
I'll hear everybody.
Hear everybody.
I think that's fair. With his background, with this record.
With his background and record and the singular instance and the fact that he did not receive mail notification, which I know is
So he had been registered for 20 years and knew he had to be registered.
He knew he had to register. He should have registered.
I think the cost of investigation should stay on the table.
Okay.
For sure.
I don't think that we can do that if
we
have a letter of concern.
I don't think we can do that with a letter of concern.
Oh, you can't?
We can?
Okay. No.
Yeah. It's either a letter of concern, no discipline,
right.
Or if there's discipline, it becomes a letter of reprimand.
Right.
I see.
So the discipline, yeah.
I mean, we've been pretty strict on this $250 for non-firm registration pretty much across the board. I mean, most of the time it's $500, but...
I mean, civil penalty.
Yeah, the civil penalty.
Civil
yeah.
penalty. You know, I mean, you know, everyone comes in and says they have, you know, story why they didn't do it. I don't know. I mean, I think, you know, if we start making changes, I'm kind of curious how this case came about. Because, normally we get the, you know, kind of letter filed from whoever the alleger is, but there isn't really one in this case. It's just a report. So that was kind of missing in the packet.
I think this is a forensic case. We had a complaint on one of his home inspectors that the board's already dealt with.
Oh, okay.
At that time, we discovered that the firm wasn't registered at the time.
Oh, okay. I got it. Yeah. Okay.
That's correct.
Right. So,
yes, Mr.
You know, I mean, if we were going to remove anything, I mean, I'd be inclined to, you know, remove the cost of investigation, but, I mean, I think that we've been pretty hardline on those civil penalties for the firm registration.
And consistent, I think. It'd be hard to deviate too much from it and explain to the other people who paid their penalty.
Yeah.
I have a question for Mr. Parlin. Mr. Parlin, do you know how long the lapse was? Or do you?
Yeah, it's in the plan.
Yeah, it's August, or July 2017 to August 2018.
Right, about a year.
Yeah, so it was over a year.
Just
it was over a year.
Year.
Okay. I was looking for that too, if it was 20 days
yeah.
or something. But
right, if it was 30 days or something, I, you know, but.
Mm-hmm. I'm afraid if we're not consistent, what are we basing this on? Is it, like, I am in a bad mood today? I mean, it's... Right? People expect consistency
right.
from the board.
Right. Well, we've had four cases today of the same thing. You know, we had two signed consent agreements for $250. Mm-hmm. Mr. Moore was in here earlier, and his was a firm registration. It was $250. You know, I think we need to be just between everyone.
So based on that discussion, is there any proposed motions?
Yeah, go ahead.
I move we have a consistency for the letter of reprimand, the civil penalty of $250, and the cost of investigation of $104.
We have a motion.
And if not, move to hearing, right?
If not signed in 30 days, move to hearing.
Thank you.
Thank you. Let's go. Do we have a second? Mr. Everwood? Okay, any more discussion on this item? Okay, all in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Okay. Thank you, Mr. Sullivan. So you have the option to accept the offer, or you can proceed to hearing if that's your choice. Appreciate your time.
Your apologies. I need to take off.
What?
Sorry. Have fun.
Thanks, man.
1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. That's okay, we're still good. Okay.
6D2.
Next item, yep, is 6D2. Move there. This is case number P18036. Mr. Hunt is the investigator. Respondent is Roth Baca, PE Mechanical, and this is regarding a project in Pima County, Arizona. I think the complaint summary is that the respondent used somebody else's work represented as his and submitted it for permitting. This was reported by the agency, and then investigative conclusions is that respondent engaged in misrepresentation, fraud, and or deceit by taking on a contract to perform work that he's not capable of performing. Because this was a structural engineer, the person was mechanical. Failed to apply the appropriate technical knowledge and skill. It's another violation. And that sealed professional documents not prepared by himself or his bona fide employee. And also that he accepted a professional engagement outside of his professional registered category while lacking the qualifications. Respondent was cooperated well with investigators, and the recommendation is letter of reprimand, state suspension and probation, restriction of practice for structural engineering, administrative penalty of $3,000, and cost of investigation of $673. So, is Mr. Baca here?
He was. He had to attend a class in Mesa, so he had to leave.
Okay. Sorry about that. He's not coming back, you think?
Or? No.
Okay.
He did sign the consent agreement. And, he has, with his firm, he does have a principal now who is a structural engineer. That's been verified, so that's something that came out of the committee that he did that very day. So.
Okay.
I move we accept the signed consent agreement.
Second.
Okay, we have a motion and a second. I will say I'm going to vote against it. I can't vote for a consent agreement of $3,000 for somebody who plagiarized somebody else's work without even giving it second thought and submitted it incorrect, and a mechanical who has never practiced structural, and then we're putting a consent agreement that restricts his practice of structural engineering. Well, he doesn't have the right to practice structural engineering in the first place because he's not a civil engineer even. So I think we have defects in our consent, and I'm not. I'm going to vote against it. So if we proceed that way. Okay. Any more discussion, or do we want to vote?
Can he retract
your motion? Well, there's a motion, but you can vote for the motion or against the motion. We can.
Yeah. Well, we can discuss it further.
We can, yeah. So we can call the motion, or we can have discussion before we call the motion to vote.
Well, you want to, I guess, the listening to your arguments, Mr. Chairman, and they're valid, they have merit. Are you proposing then that this consent agreement be revised by staff?
If we don't vote for it, if it doesn't get approved, I would suggest that the penalty is too light. And we should probably even consider suspending registration, and if nothing else, add courses on ethics or other issues to this case.
I understand. Okay, so it's lacking and needs to be revised.
$3,000 for five violations that are all very serious. I mean, he took an assignment in structural without knowing structural. He took somebody else's work and appropriated it for himself.
No, as a mechanical engineer, I agree with you. It's well beyond the realm of expertise.
Okay.
Did we ask, how you came to 3,000? I'm sure it wasn't out of the blue.
Yeah, just based on past board action, some of the violations weren't as severe. The committee did not find as severe as, say, the fraudulent activity or the technical knowledge. And to take consideration of Mr. Baca, he had been performing similar type of, not this specific work, but he does do like foundation inspections. Committee did discuss that, and they found that he does have some structural knowledge, but these types of projects that he was doing, he just couldn't answer simple basic structural questions, calculation questions, and that he referred the calculations to someone who he claimed was a structural, but he's only registered as PE, so they actually had issues with that PE doing structural work as well, because they were just faulty calculations. And in fact, he did take ownership of that. He realized it too late in the project, he stated. He was overstepping his knowledge to complete the project. He doesn't believe that he took someone else's work, but he found differently. But that was all in consideration of what fine we were recommending, and based on past board action and the severity weight.
Okay.
I'm not opposed to anything beefier, but...
Okay. Understood. Any more discussion, or should we call the motion? Okay. All in favor of the motion? Opposed?
Aye.
Okay. So,
or nay.
Nay, yeah, that's right.
You oppose your own motion.
Okay.
Threw it out there for discussion.
Yeah, so I apologize for going back in this consent agreement. And I don't know if anybody has any suggestions, but I would like to increase the fine from $3,000 to maybe $1,000 per violation, which would make it five, and add a requirement to take an ethics course for the registrant.
What's the point of the ethics course? I mean, just because he took an assignment outside of his...
No, and appropriated somebody else's work. Well, I mean, took somebody else's assignment.
He literally took the project. Ramjack gave him an example of someone else's work, and they took the project and he handed it to his structural guy. He said, here, copy it.
And it wasn't even the same system.
Correct.
But they submitted the wrong system just because they were given one.
Okay. So that's what the ethics thing would be for. Okay,
yep.
Gotcha.
Dr. Angel, you were saying before you thought some amount of suspension would be necessary. Any thoughts on that?
I don't think I can carry the day on that, so
okay.
I'm going to go there. But I'm very concerned that a registrant would do that.
Well, we had a restriction of practice, and that was in the consent, right?
The restriction of practice in the consent, but I guess my question is, how does that work if he's not a civil engineering?
Yeah.
Civil engineering, he's practicing structural. Because Mr. Hunt, you said he does foundations and other things, right?
Yes, foundation inspections for the modular homes.
But it sounds like he has a structural on staff now. So.
He does now. We verified that.
I mean, you can restrict, the restriction would be him personally performing
right.
structural stuff, mm-hmm. not his firm.
Good.
So.
Keep it in there.
I mean, if he has someone that's on staff that's can sign and seal his stuff, basically we're just going to look for someone else's stamp on his work instead of...
I'm good with that. My question was more along the lines, I mean, it's like having to tell someone who's an engineer to not practice landscape architecture. We shouldn't have to say that because it's obvious he can't.
Right.
A mechanical should not be practicing structural without a license. But given that it's come up, maybe we do include it. So,
yeah, the 5,000, I tallied up kind of the severity scores. It seems like a 1,000 per incident is in the right
makes
range.
Makes sense. Okay.
Being consistent. Oh, I make a motion.
Oh,
that we revise the consent agreement to 5,000 in civil penalties and a course on required course on ethics as the two revisions.
How many hours?
Chairman, any idea on how many hours of the course work?
Four hours.
Four hours.
Four seems like a good number.
And I also ask if you're going to change the time frame in which you can pay that, or should you leave it 6 months?
I'm not as worried about that if it takes a little longer. I mean, I understand.
Just for...
Okay. I'll give him 12 months.
12 months?
Gotcha.
To pay it.
And how long for the ethics course? Same.
90 days? I mean, that should be quick, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Okay. Maybe you can find them.
Yeah, it's usually electronic.
Yeah.
Cost of behavior would be 12 months. Cost of investigation? Yes,
mm-hmm.
please.
Mm-hmm. And if not, sign in 30 days.
Go to here.
Okay.
Yes.
But we're still keeping the restriction of practice and everything else.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yes.
I think so. I just want to make sure. It's
so I just want to make sure. I just want to make sure on the record that I know you said just change those few things, but
thank you.
He's putting consent agreement consisting of, but we need to add all the other stuff that was in there too.
The original consent agreement.
We're not concerned about adding restriction of practice, Mr. Donald. Is that okay?
That should be fine.
Okay. Thank you.
The restriction of practice.
No, restriction.
Restriction of practice.
Keeping in all the other terms of the original consent, just modifying what part suggested.
Yeah, so it's the original plus just ethics and a $5,000 penalty.
Yeah, 5,000 for 12 months and the 4 hours of ethics on top of everything else that was already
in addition to
on top of, right.
Yeah. Thank you.
Okay. So we have a motion. Do we have a second? Mr. Montgomery? Kirk, do you have the motion?
Just to be consistent, let's make the, what CP is, AP, administrative penalty. That's what's currently there.
Oh, thank you.
Is that okay?
Yes. That is a fantastic amendment. Thank you.
Good. Okay, we have a motion and a second. All in favor of the motion?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Okay. Hey, we're done with the D's.
We have one item administrative penalty.
That's the one we were doing, right?
We're moving to item 6E1. Agenda item 6E1.
Hey, Jason.
Which is case P18065. This is respondent is Winter Waji, and this is about a boundary survey on North Central Lot 12. An EAC reviewed the survey and found no deficiencies in the survey, but found that the registrant might have engaged in reckless disregard of a legal duty during a phone call on May 5th, in possible violation of ARS 32128C2, just in terms of using abusive language on that conversation. So staff is requesting board guidance on this case. If you want to see the transcript of that call, I believe that's on page 1966 of the packet. So like I said, the technical school is not an issue. Would you please, gentlemen, state your name for the board if you're here? Who you are?
Richard Waggy.
Richard Waggy. Thank you, Mr. Waggy.
I'm Jim Sanders, the one who deal with this last couple of years, yes.
Thank you, Mr. Sanders. Is there anything you guys, each of you, would like to say to the board real quick, please? And maybe start with Mr. Sanders if you want to go first.
Yeah, I have about 2 years' worth of history with this whole issue. And what Mr. Waggy, did was basically solidify a neighbor's argument that they actually owned my mother's property and a zero property in my community. And so this started with Brian Getzenberger, who's also a registered surveyor, who I would like to find out how this relationship is with Mr. Waggy. That's why I called him. Just say, what are you doing? Find out why his survey is totally wrong. I had another surveyor. We went through the measurements. They're all estimated measurements. There's not one thing on there that validates a legal survey. The dates are wrong on it. And I don't see how you guys found that there was anything wrong with that or not wrong with that. So, one, the survey was falsified to support these, the Cummings claim to property, which was absolutely ridiculous, and zero lot line community, which fueled the fire to get them to hire an attorney, which later all this was unsubstantiated, and they moved. And so this put my mother through 18 months of pure heck, and she ended up having a heart attack 2 weeks ago. But anyway, my call to Mr. Waggy was just simply, why would you put yourself out there to walk around like you're actually doing a survey, not doing it, give these people some more ammunition to hire an attorney just to write a letter, which was later unsubstantiated as well, to continue this process. If you go through these documents, it is very well documented what he did. He moved the house over just where Brian Gessenberger, who is the president of the board, who is supporting Bobby Cummings during her arguments for this whole thing, which I have no idea why he's motivated to do that. But here's the board president supporting her claim to her property just because Bobby Cummings wanted a little bit bigger property. And it makes no sense to me. So I have an entire presentation I'd love to show you guys based on the facts that occurred during this time. And I'd like an opportunity to do that because I have documented, as you guys see, very clearly. I was a former fighter pilot, commercial airline pilot for going on 25 years. I believe in rules. I believe in following them. And this is just beyond my scope of belief what went on with this particular situation. We had to hire attorneys. They hired attorneys. I've been spending hundreds of hours on this. And it's really ridiculous if you look at it. So the magnitude of what this little survey did is enormous. You guys really need to see that.
Thank you, Mr. Sanders. You want to, Mr. Wagge, anything you want to say?
Not really. I think the evidence that he gave to the board is substantially flawed, and it's all GIS information off of the county GIS site, and he's making measurements and trying to, excuse me, it's my turn.
Mm-hmm.
He did have conversations with Mr. Gessenberger, Brian Gessenberger, who I'm personally friends with, and probably stop in and see him two or three times a week. Basically he couldn't do the survey because he had a conflict of interest in the sense that he was the homeowners association president. So he didn't even want to recommend someone to them. So they went and found me online and said, do you know this guy? And he said, yeah, that guy's great. So I went and performed the survey, and the biggest portion of it was that I had to convince the Cummins that what they do is they put the houses 10 feet apart instead of 10-foot setbacks. And then what they do is they extend the wall off of the back of one side of the house, and they give a use benefit easement so that the one house gets that 5 feet of the neighbor's property. These are always problematic. I've had every single one of these that I've done has ended up going to litigation. So, you know, I learned my lesson on this one. I'm never going to touch anything with those use-benefit easements again.
Okay. And Mr. Sanders, just for your benefit, we do have the entire packet with your documents on it.
Okay. And if you look, all his measurements were based on what he said, the GIS. We went out there with a tape measure, and everything he did was false. My little brother actually followed him around while he was there, too. And I don't know if you can do this without any equipment, but it was just you walking around the house. So
I have a GPS unit in my house.
Oh, is that how you did it? Okay.
Wait. Let's... Please speak when I ask you to speak, Mr. Sanders and Mr.
Okay.
Wagge. Appreciate it. So at this point, let's do some board discussion. We'll ask you questions if we have any.
Can I say one more thing, please?
Yes, sir.
The Cummings would not show us the survey. They just said that their surveyor agreed with Brian, who is a surveyor, and so therefore this is their property, and they decide that what culminated this into an actionable event was the Cummings decided to put a ton of rock on my mom's pathway so she couldn't get her garbage cans out. She had just broke her hip. And it created a huge safety hazard. That's when I really got stepped into this. And so that, with his little friend came afterwards, but Brian Gessenberger and the Cummings decided to go out there and mark a property line, and that document's in there too. Here's a surveyor, Brian Gessenberger, saying, this is where we're going to move the property line. There's no more, you know, basically no more discussion. And, you know, I have recordings of these conversations, so don't shake your head. I have video, and I have everything carefully documented. So I would love for this to go to trial because this is, the other thing they did was would not show us that survey unless we paid $350 to them. I said, well, why don't you show me the survey if it says what you say? No, you have to pay for half of it, and then we'll show it to you.
So the only time I saw it was when their attorney sent us a copy of it.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Sanders. And but I'd like to open it up for board discussion, please, at this time.
So is Brian the president of the homeowner?
Yes.
He's a land surveyor.
He says
he
is.
He has a conflict of interest to do the survey, so he says, I cannot recommend a surveyor to you. And you being one of his best buddies, you just happened to get a phone call because somebody found you online.
I was on Home Advisor. That's where they found me.
And Brian get
okay.
How many home advisors are on that directory?
Excuse me?
How many home advisors are in that directory?
Surveyors?
Surveyors.
Oh, it's a class of, when you go in with the home advisor, you can request a quote from a professional and surveying, and they have everything. They got painters, they got, you know, carpentry, they got everything. It's pretty cool. I was getting almost all my business from them at that time.
So, again, I just want to remind everybody, what's at stake here is the technical competence of Mr. Wagy's survey and the conduct during the performance of the survey is what we have in front of us.
I think that REACs went through, they looked at Mr. Wagy's survey, and they found no problems. And I really have no arguments with that. I think they did a good job with what they did. There's a question I have, though. I keep hearing this term zero lot line, and I don't see that reflected in our packet. Which would lead me to ask Mr. Sanders, did you hire another surveyor? Did you get a second opinion?
I got a second opinion from Prescott, a surveyor who has over 40 years' experience, and I'd be happy to get him in here. And he saw that there was really, he couldn't figure out what he did or where he got his calculations. And we looked on the GIS, he goes, oh, here's where he got it. But the fact is that one of the issues I have is when I called him, he knew exactly who I was. So he must have been having discussions with Brian. And that's, he didn't get his name from the site, he says. Brian must have notified him, because if you listen to the phone call, he didn't even know me by name, but when I said the location, he just went off and said, you don't know what you're talking about, blah, blah, blah. So he knew who I was.
So did you get a survey? Did you get a certified document from a land surveyor that said,
this sort of
I believe something different than what Mr. Wagy has observed. Do you have anything? I didn't see anything like that in the packet.
I can get an opinion from him if that's what you want. No. The other thing is that if this was, I'm not quite sure, but there's a process to, if the lot lines have changed or the land definitions have changed, it has to go before board, and that has to be submitted to the county and has to be registered. Is that correct?
I can't answer that question. Again, I don't see anything in this packet that says you got a second opinion.
A second opinion is not someone saying this doesn't look right. A second opinion would be a surveyor looking for the property corners and saying this is where those property boundaries are at and certifying that.
Yes.
That would be a second opinion.
Okay. What he did is he told me where to measure. He's up in Prescott, and he would come down to measure it, but he just said, I got to take this, take a 300-tape measure.
Okay, so you don't have a document. Nobody certified a document that said, here's measurements made by a professional surveyor in Arizona.
Not at this time.
He'd be happy to come down and do it.
Okay.
He just didn't see necessary because
I just wondered if I missed
records.
Something in the packet. Right now, our board is dealing with one survey, and that survey met the standards of care.
Wow.
So
even though the date's wrong and the measurements are obviously wrong?
Now, there may be another surveyor that would come up with a different opinion, and that would be something that would be looked at differently.
I will give that to you.
At this point, I don't see any real technical deficiencies other than I keep hearing this term zero lot line. And there is a point where they lined up the drawings in the package. I don't know if everybody really saw that, but when you see that, you see a difference between a house sitting on a lot line and houses evenly spaced with lot lines in them. Now, I'm not challenging Mr. Wagy's opinion of that at all. I don't know how that subdivision came about or was created or what's happened with it. There's not enough information in this package to do that. So I'm relying on this seal and signature just like the EAC did and said, we don't see anything wrong here. So
if you've reviewed the CC&Rs that are included in
the we had two more surveyors look at it and did not find any issues with the survey.
So. Yeah. Now, it is a communal environment, and I did see rules that suggested people could encroach on either side of the property for various reasons, and I'm not exactly sure what they are off the top of my head, but you see these easements along the property line where at least, mm-hmm. I think it's 5 feet on each side, is consumed in this communal kind of use. Mm-hmm. So I'm not sure if this is really a board issue or more of a homeowners association issue. What we have in the packet says that the surveyor did a technically sufficient job, I guess is the way to say that. I saw the correspondence. The correspondence bothers me because it comes up so quick and explosive. So I don't know what's behind that. Apparently these two gentlemen have been discussing things that we don't have the benefit of knowing for the last 2 years, so I don't know what's been what led up to that explosion, but I personally am not happy with that kind of language to anybody. So.
Mm-hmm. All right, thanks.
Mr. Donald had a suggestion.
Mr. Donald?
If there are other materials that could assist the board at this point, the board could always defer this to next month to consider additional materials. And I believe there's another matter that would be agendized as well that may be practical to take care of at the same time.
So having to get a survey done.
But given what we've seen and the other surveyors that have opined.
If he gets a second survey, the problem is we won't be able to get it on the board next month anyway, because we would need to have assessments made of that survey to make sure that survey is competent as well.
True.
So that would push this case back several months.
Well, leads us to a place, though, where we have two competing opinions as well, that we go back to that old fight that everybody hates me about, but we have these two competing opinions that are valid opinions.
I love you about that.
Yeah.
For the record.
Me
too. So I don't see that. I frankly don't see that serving any purpose to wait. Because even best case scenario, we're going to get another valid survey, and we've got competing valid surveys. It happens.
I really think the challenge in this area is that there's use benefit areas, whatever they call it, where it might be one person's property, but the other adjacent property owner has rights to use it.
Can I address that?
Yes, Mr. Sanders, if you make it brief and specific to the point, please.
The CC&Rs, it very clearly stated in the CC&Rs, which I will give every board member a copy of, and it's clearly stated that the common use areas are designated common use areas. There's a 5-foot easement into the other property for overhangs, meaning shrubbery, so each house in the line gets a 5-foot easement, and my mother's easement was actually into theirs 5 feet. Hers wasn't into hers 5 feet. He moved the house over 5 feet, so it looked as though the easement line was the property line. If you look at those drawings very closely, it was purposely moved over 5 feet to the easement line for depiction on his survey so he could prove his point. It was very difficult to see that, but I did it mathematically, and I proved it in those documents you have, that he moved the house over, or his survey over, exactly 5 feet, so it would support their argument so they could defraud my mother. Now that's what it is in a nutshell, and I can prove that.
Mr. Sanders, I would caution you against doing surveying yourself, because there's nuances that might lead you to the wrong conclusion. I understand your concern. I understand how sensitive this is, but I much rather not take your professional opinion in surveying issues, because that could lead to a problem. So, okay. So I don't know, I'm of the opinion like Candy that I don't think we have a survey, and we had three surveyors look at it, and they all said it's competent. I don't know how that's going to change.
Don't we have a pretty narrow jurisdiction here to look at whether a survey appears to meet the professional
standards
right? We're not getting into
the property
right.
Right. Right. Homeowner dispute
that's,
is not
that's
our
a whole, sorry, that doesn't seem like our...
I do share concerns, as Jason mentioned, with Mr. Waggy's behavior because I think part of being a professional is, you know, display appropriate and respectful behavior. Just be aware of that, Mr. Waggy.
Yeah.
So, based on that discussion, what would be the board's suggested solution?
Can I add something?
Yes, sir. If it's brief again, please.
Yes. The person who was there watching me followed me around and was telling me that GPS doesn't work for surveying. And basically, the gentleman who he says is his brother that was there, he did look younger than this man, basically was involved in a verbal altercation with the Cumminses on the property. Once I got to a certain point, I was going to set corners, but they didn't want them set because they would have been in the curb. And they didn't want the holes drilled in the curb to set pins. And also, the allegations were made even to Mr. Getzenberger by the complainant that I committed fraud and forgery, and it's the furthest thing from the truth.
Okay, I'm not sure that's relevant to this discussion, Mr. Waggy. Thank you, though. Mr. Sanders, I'll give you 20 seconds to say whatever it's on your mind to finish up, please.
Okay, you guys mentioned standards. I live my life by standards. It's you do it with a checklist, and she mentioned those standards. I went through your standards for a survey to be useful or that you agree that is a survey. So I'd like, if possible, for the three people that look at this survey to compare it to the set of standards you have for a real survey and let me know if it matches those. Because my layman's terms and the guy that I paid to give me a second opinion up there doesn't think so, and I'd be happy to bring him in for a hearing.
Okay. Understood. I will say the surveyors who looked at it for substantive compliance. If a date is wrong, that's a different item, Mr. Sanders. Okay, where are we at this point?
I have a question for Mr. Donald. Mr. Donald, if we were to dismiss this case, could the alleger still pursue a formal survey certified by a registrant in Arizona and reintroduce a case based on any findings from that? Would that be a new case? Is that something that...
That would be something that, if the board is concerned about that as a possibility, it might be better to do an administrative closure rather than dismissing the case altogether. The board could reopen a case at a later date, absolutely, but administrative closure might be a preferred method to an outright dismissal by the board. But it would be a dismissal based on the information available at present. So if that matter certainly could be reopened by the board. This is not a superior court or anything.
We have potentially two paths forward. I mean, one is the dismissal. The other one could be to give Mr. Sanders 30 days to get his own survey and then have an EAC review both surveys and see if they can come up with a clear resolution on it. But I don't know. I think as Andy said, what is that going to do? That's more of a court dispute, I think, or homeowner's dispute than a technical ability on the survey.
I agree.
I think my only question was whether we would issue a letter of concern regarding the verbal altercation. I'm probably not in favor of discipline on that, but that was kind of my question in this case.
That sounds like a palatable motion.
Well, I wouldn't agree with that. I mean, I talk to your clients as your own business. I mean, you know, we don't really know the
back history.
And forth.
Yeah.
I mean, this guy could have been harassed forever, and you just don't know. I mean, so you know, I don't feel it's our, as a board, to regulate how someone speaks to one of their own clients.
He's not his client, though.
No, and I've never talked to him.
How you speak to
life.
Anybody. I mean, you know, would any one of us want, you know, a board case brought against us because we told someone that what we thought of them? I don't.
Well, if you do bad enough, then it becomes a criminal complaint for harassment or something else.
But then it would be a criminal complaint, and then it would be brought up for, you know, a criminal complaint against your license. But
so if somebody doesn't file a case, that's not an issue.
So I think based on what's in front of us, I'm going to have to move to dismiss.
Okay. So we have a motion to dismiss. Is there a second?
I'll second.
I do have one question before I vote. Is there any similar related discipline for Mr. Waggy on record? Do we know? Mr. Ted? Sean?
No.
No?
Not at this point.
Okay. I do think a letter of concern would have been appropriate, so I'll vote accordingly. Okay. All in favor of dismissal?
Aye.
Aye.
Any opposed?
Nay.
Nay.
Abstain.
So we have two nays. Did I hear two nays?
Yes.
Okay, and one abstain. That means four ayes, four yes. So motion passes. Thank you, Mr. Sanders and Mr. Waggy. Okay. Is everybody okay, or do we need a quick break?
Would you mind?
Let's make it 5 minutes, because I think we have to finish around 1 o'clock.
Okay.
So 5 minutes, we'll reconvene. Mr. Winters, we're going to take a 5-minute break, 12:10. Okay, we're back in session. Mr. Winters, are we good? Start?
Yeah, okay.
We will move to agenda item 6E2, case P19020. Respondent is Robert Stevenson, RLS, and his case is here because of a felony conviction. He's in jail. You have his, he wrote a letter to the board, and it's included in our packet to see what action we need to take. Is there anybody here for this case? Come forward, please, and state your name for the record.
My name is Marcia Stevenson. I'm Robert Stevenson's mother.
Thank you, Ms. Stevenson. Thank you for coming. Mr. Kramer? Okay. Has everybody been able to read the case? And then, Ms. Stevenson, is there anything that you would like to ask the board to consider?
Well, I'm here just because my son can't be to answer any questions if I can.
Thank you. I will say that to open up the case, I was very appreciative of the letter he wrote. It seemed very candid and open. I appreciated that he had disclosed the conviction and the renewal as well, and has been honest throughout. On the other hand, I'm also very concerned about the behavior that, you know, resulted in the felony. So my question, I don't know if you have to get into a lot of detail, but I mean, are there any mental health issues that need to be addressed for him to continue to work as a surveyor?
I don't believe so. He had a motorcycle accident. He had a concussion. He broke his neck. He had a seizure. He was diagnosed with TBI, and he was all right for a while, and then I think he started medicating over the counter with the medicines that the doctor gave him. And he wasn't himself, but he is now. I mean, since I talked to him 4 times a week, probably a month after he was incarcerated, I could really see the difference in him. And I was going to have him evaluated like 2 weeks prior to, or after the incarceration happened. And that, of course, that didn't happen. And there's nothing that they do there at the prison for him right now, but I really believe that he's okay, and I'm not saying that he shouldn't probably have some help when he gets out. I'm not a doctor, I don't know.
Okay. Thank you, Ms. Stevens.
How long has he been incarcerated?
Since 2015.
And how much more do you anticipate him having?
He has a year to go. He'll be out February the 1st, 2020, and then he has 6 months of probation. And he will be living at my house. He was living at his own place until the accident, and then he moved back in with me because he couldn't drive for a while.
Is his business still active?
Well,
I mean, it's hard. I guess what I'm saying is, it might be possible to have a business, and him being incarcerated correspond through the mail working for him or something like that. Okay.
Again, I'm sorry to pry, but does he have a permit to carry weapons right now, or
does he have a what?
A permit to carry weapons?
No.
Yeah.
Okay. He wouldn't be allowed to carry a weapon after this.
Okay.
I mean, he can't have a weapon.
He's a felon.
He did have a permit.
Right.
You know,
but he does not anymore.
No.
Okay.
No, he's lost that right.
Okay.
He lost a lot of rights.
Yeah. Okay. Melissa or Mr. Donald, what are typically our options here? I mean, isn't it being incarcerated an automatic suspension while he's in jail, or no?
No. It's not automatic.
Okay.
I don't know if Scott wants to.
It's not automatic. The court has flexibility. Take a look at the.
Okay, so if it's not automatic, that's okay. That's a good thing. It obviously goes against a good moral character clause of our statute that somebody convicted of a felony is not considered to be a good moral character. Here's where I'm at.
So he's up for renewal, right? Is that what this was? This is
renewal.
That's,
so it's not.
Yeah. So, I mean, you have all your options. You can forward it to formal hearing to take disciplinary action. You could offer a consent agreement that gives him rehabilitative opportunities for when he gets out. Right, Scott? And
My concern is the mental health. So do we have the authority to say, you know, we're going to suspend while you're in jail. When you are done, if you get an evaluation that says that there's no mental health issues, when you get that, we'll reinstate you?
You can probably add that into a consent agreement as a term.
Condition of probation.
Of reinstatement?
Right.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, offer a consent agreement for a period of time of suspension while he's incarcerated, and then, you know, as a term for lifting the suspension, submit to a psych eval for you to review the results and consider.
I would consider couching that in terms of that being indicia of rehabilitation.
Right, right. Because he'll have to demonstrate to you that he's safe to practice.
Exactly.
And then any other terms that you feel are necessary, whether a refresher, training and serving since he's been out of it for a while, you know, whatever you feel, probation, retraining or something.
Does anybody want to make a motion or discuss the case?
I think one of the things that's important is to contain his license while he's incarcerated so we don't have a rubber stamping opportunity.
Yep.
And I'm not saying that he would do that at all. But there would be an opportunity for that to happen. I also want to preserve the great opportunity for rehabilitation. I don't want to destroy this person when he leaves his incarceration and ruin his life. I mean, I think that he's had enough struggles as there is. So I think the better option for society is to provide him with the continual opportunity to rehabilitate. So I'm looking for, maybe you, Andrew, you're a pretty wordy guy. If you can help me with some words on that. I just don't know
how to
do it.
I think you said that the wrong way.
Wordy. I came across.
Word.
wording.
I think that it's in the best interest to preserve his opportunity when his commitment is through with the state, and allow him to get back on track, rehabilitate.
I mean, is that consistent with suspending his license? I mean, renewing, but suspending until February of 2020 when he gets out of jail. Two requirements, I mean, to be released from prison and to undergo a mental health evaluation where the doctor clears him to practice. And if that's the case, then he gets his license back.
Now, what would it be if you didn't renew and his license would just...
go inactive, right?
Go inactive. But then when he got out, he could just reapply again? I mean, what would be the steps at that point in time?
He would actually get canceled if he doesn't renew, and so he would have to reapply again.
Right.
Which means retesting.
Oh, we'd have to retest?
Because he's been out.
Been out of it for a long time. And maybe that would be, you know, maybe that would be justifiable. If we're concerned about his ability to do surveying or, you know, from having a head injury or something like that, I mean, that would be an option as well, right?
Well, it's an option. I think it creates a little bit more barriers for him to get back into it.
I do too. Yeah. I think it does. I mean, he's a well-established, his time frame in practice is long, so I think that, the testing part might be a little redundant. Mm-hmm. I don't know that's going to test. Testing is mechanical. It's the mechanical parts of surveying, right? So I don't know that we're going to be able to tell. I think the evaluation that Alejandro mentioned would be more of a determining factor of his ability to practice. I don't know if that sounds right.
I mean, I think that's our concern, isn't it? I mean, the reason this came up is because he had a felony because he was violent with a weapon. Right. So, or not violent, you know.
I mean, I think you have a legitimate concern for public protection.
But we're going to want to have the chance to review and consider anything that's submitted. So we can't really put an end date on this. It's almost like we want to suspend his license for the duration of his incarceration through pick a date by which point we would want a medical evaluation confirming rehabilitation and the ability to practice, and we'll consider it at the April 20 meeting or whatever.
Right. So I think we do an indefinite suspension to be lifted once he is released from prison and has completed a mental evaluation to the satisfaction of the board.
To the satisfaction of the board.
If it's a consent.
Well, yeah, actually, Mr. Chair, could we possibly revisit this next month or a brief executive session for legal? But there's one aspect of this I do want to take a quick look at, if we could. And I might just need to touch base with Melissa real quickly on this. So if we could take just a minute.
Okay. Or Ms. Stevenson, do you live here in Yuma?
Yes.
Okay.
I'm going to move that we revisit that, if that's okay with you, Ms. Stevens. Let's revisit this next month.
Okay. It's going to be a long meeting next month, too, so plan an all day. Okay. We don't need a motion to table, do we?
Okay, I don't know.
No.
Okay. Robert's rules, no. I don't know.
Here too.
Yeah, the wordy guy.
Wordy guy.
Nice way of saying lawyer.
Okay, so we're.
Thank you for coming in.
Thank you,
Stevenson. Thank you for coming.
Thank you very much.
We'll go to item 6E4. Wait, did we do? No, we have done 3, but we got to go to 4. There's someone here for 4.
Okay.
6E4. Case number P19012. Respondent is Ron Darling. This is Darling Designs Residential Architecture and Interiors for non-registered practice of architecture. We had this case on the December meeting, and we had some discussion about the potential confusion because the name of the business is Residential Architecture and Interior Design. I think Mr. Darling, from what I read in the packet, has stated he will not change the name of his business or of his advertisement. So that leads us to where we're at. Would you please state your name?
My name is Mike Lynch. I was here on the 18th of December. I received a letter telling me to come on the 18th, but when I got here, they told me it had already occurred on the 11th.
Okay.
So I asked this gentleman to give me the opportunity to come here.
I apologize for that.
No, it's a mistake. So, real briefly, I live in Moon Valley, and for the 5 years prior to last February, I was the sole caregiver for my mom and my sister. My mom had severe MS and my sister had ovarian cancer. And over that period of time, the house got dated and a little bit worn down. And after they passed, I decided to renovate the house, an extensive renovation. And I paid $900 to an engineer and $3,400 to a general contractor and architect to do the planning, the engineering, and to get me the city permits to do the work. And what I was going to do was take the living room, the dining room, and the kitchen, and raise the ceiling 12 feet. So that was in April when I paid that money, and they kept leading me on, telling me that I would get my permit any day. And the week after the 4th of July, I went down to the city of Phoenix where you get the building permits, and I asked them what's going on. They said, there's no application for your house.
Sure.
And I went every week for 3 weeks and asking, and nothing. So when my mom was in Mayo, my brother came down from Colorado, and we talked about the renovation, and we went to one of those fancy kitchen places in Scottsdale. And they had some real nice stuff, and they kept calling me, wanting me to give them the deposit. And I said, I can't, because I don't even have a building permit, so what would I do with all your cabinets before I even tear my house down? So after that happened, when I found out these people were, whatever the word is, the next time they called, the place was called An Original, and I said, I need, you know, the architect you told me about, because they had told me they had a great architect they worked with. They did a lot of projects with him. They showed me his website, Darling Architecture. So they called him, and then I called him, and I told him that I needed an architect to get me the permits and the plans for my house, or with the renovation. He said, I can come out this weekend. He came out. He told me he only does selective jobs, you know. And because An Original recommended me to him, or he to me, that he would take the job. I contacted the engineer I had in the spring given $900 to as a retainer. He said he would work with this architect. So about a month later, the architect said he had preliminary plans and he would send them to that engineer. He did, and on a Monday, like 4 or 5 days later, he sent me an email saying that he had fired the engineer because he hadn't completed the work. And you have to understand, this whole time I've been, the dogs and the cats and I are living in two bedrooms with no hot water, no kitchen, people breaking in at night. Anyway, so he fired the engineer, and he said he had someone who could do it, and give him the weekend to contact this guy. And I said, well, that's fine, but I'm going to look too, because I can't keep living this way. So my neighbors referred me to an engineer who came right out to the house. On the following Monday, I asked the architect if he had contacted his engineer. He said, no, he never got back to me. So I said, okay. He said, but give me till Wednesday. I said, no, I want to move forward. I'm hiring Mark Sturgeon to do the engineering on this project. So Mark came out again, walked the house, and later in the day he called me and said that the architect refused to talk to him. And a few minutes later, I got emails, and it's all included in what I gave you. telling me after I'd given Mark $3,000 deposit to do the work, to fire him, even if I lost $3,000. And I refused. So a couple weeks later, Darling said he was finished with the plans. He sent them to Mark. Mark came to my house and told me that there was a huge problem with these plans, that this gentleman doesn't know what he's doing, that you will never get it approved by the city, and worse yet, it's unsafe. I have, it's those old cement tiles on the roof, and he, there was a block wall built in 1971 with no rebar, no cement in it. You know, it was just, and the we had dug the cement up for the footing, and the footing, the original footing was collapsing, and Mark said this is a, it won't work. So he went back to Darlene and took the plans to him with his red line and all the things that needed to be done, and Darlene refused to let him in. And Mark took a picture of the plans and sent it to me that they were there at his front door. And 5 minutes after Mark left saying he was coming to my house, Darlene called me and said, and the emails are in there, in profane language, your engineer is an A, and F him and fire him now. And
Mr. Lynch, I hate to interrupt you, but the one, I want you to
well,
be aware.
Here's where we go okay. into this. When I went to the city all those times, they kept wondering, well, you know, what's going on? And I told them, I said, okay, listen. They didn't know exactly what I was going to do, but they said, you can use a designer in Arizona to do this. But it's going to have to be engineered. And you can go on the website and look for designers. So I did. And I interviewed two or three of them. They came out to the house. And they were talking about, well, don't raise the ceilings. We'll buy low furniture, and we'll paint, you know. So when Darlene came out to the house, I told him the history of the project, and I told him about the city and the designers. He goes, oh, no, you don't want that. So I had a guy who represented himself to me as an architect. And no, he never said to me, Mike, I'm an architect. His website says he's an architect. I was referred by people he does work with who said he's an architect. When Mark called you folks and checked up on him, and he's not an architect, I called him and I said, you're not an architect. He goes, I never said I was. I called the kitchen place and said, he's not an architect. They insisted he was.
Okay, so that's,
and the very next day, they returned the $20,000 deposit I'd given.
Right. So our concern and limitation is, because he's not registered, we can't weigh in on whether he did good work or bad work or his behavior or anything like that. The only thing we can weigh in, I think, is whether he's representing that he's practicing architecture.
Okay.
So we need
everybody I introduced him to, the framers, the carpenters, everyone, when he came to the house, I introduced him as the architect. He never said, I'm not an architect. I didn't change the footprint of my house. I didn't add any square feet. I was going up, raise the ceiling. I don't need an interior decorator. I don't want someone to pick fuchsia paint for my living room. You know, and
thank you, Mr.
I paid $7,300 for this. And when he said to fire the engineer or he would charge me an extra $3,000 and $1,200 a page.
Mr. Lynch, I understand.
To do it.
I understand, but I guess I'll give you 30 seconds to close because we really need to move and we can't weigh in on
okay.
that stuff.
I know a couple Mexican boys who have been helping me, and they used to go to the Home Depot to get work. And they did, and they did some minor home renovations, and the owner tried to stiff them, and he called the county and had them charged with doing construction work without a general contractor.
That has nothing to do with what we're talking about today,
so
sir.
So if you can charge two Mexican boys for that, you can charge a guy who's pretending to be an architect.
Okay, Mr. Lynch.
And it should be turned over to the county. And I'm sorry.
Mr. Lynch, please.
This has been a, I
Mr.
Know,
Lynch.
I know.
Mr. Lynch, please.
I've been here three
We're
times.
Not going to hear your case if you keep talking. I need you to come down because we can't have anything to do with that. Our question is Mr. Darling representing himself to be an architect? And we've heard your testimony and appreciate it. But I need you to stick with that. please.
I've got a question for
Thank
the board.
You.
Because the summary report we have here from staff focuses entirely on this representation issue. But if you look at the ledger documents and the respondent documents, there's also some discussion about the quality of the work. So are we not looking at that? That just wasn't, there's no resolution to that.
We can't because he's not a registrant.
No.
We can't take any license because he doesn't
right,
have
right.
one.
You're right.
So our only, the only thing we really can act on is he portraying himself to be an architect. And we got, you know, Mr. Lynn's testimony said that he never corrected anybody. I personally have concerns about all the stationery and advertising that he uses. But it goes back to the issue that, you know, it says residential architecture, which the state statute said anyone can do. They have an exception where anybody can, as you learn, a designer can do residential work without having to be an architect. And again, there's recent case law on this. The real question is he deceiving people to think he's an architect? And is he displaying the title architect or architecture for a commercial purpose? That's not residential architecture.
Does the state of Arizona have somebody who oversees non-registrant residential designers?
No.
No. Okay. I think that's a civil issue.
Okay.
A civil litigation issue.
How is this different from the Lee Shaw?
Not very.
I just heard.
Not very.
I think it's actually.
There's a difference. I'm a member of the public. He was turned in by other architects. He deceived me, and so did the kitchen people in Scottsdale. And if he can deceive me, he can deceive a lot of other people.
Okay.
He's not, well, where is he? No, he's not here. Did we invite him to be here, Mr. Will?
Yes, we did.
What did he say?
He said he was going to be here.
Yeah, but he was not going to change anything on his advertisement, stationery, or any other materials. By this rule.
True.
Yeah.
I mean, my concern is we can spend years chasing out this case, but I don't think any court that this gets appealed to would find in our favor unless we have hard proof that he's representing himself to be an architect. Himself, not a third party saying he's an architect, but him, if he said at one point, I'm an architect,
yeah.
I think that's different
to
get the work. So if you have that, Mr. Lynch, we can act on it. Otherwise, I find it very difficult to act on it, despite the fact that you're probably right.
It's about the proof.
I'm not questioning whether you're right or wrong. The question is, can we prove this to that effect? So do you have any proof that he, does he have business cards where he says he's an architect?
No.
That's...
Yeah, you're right. Our purview as a board is that. I mean, I don't see really much difference between this and the Lee Shaw one.
I think if the website shows a bunch of non-residential projects is one thing, but I don't think it
we
does.
We don't even have that here.
No,
we don't even have that.
So, you know, this gentleman probably has a case in some other, you know, court or with somewhere
That's
else
okay.
maybe, but, you know,
you
here.
Know, I got the money back from the other crooks. You know, the what do they call the Register of Contractors?
Yeah.
And they and Mark are the ones who told me to come to you. Because I have heat and hot water now, but I still am washing my dishes in the bathtub, so I've been sort of preoccupied. And when I get done, I will, you know, my lawyer said also, this is a way to get, like happened to Mao and Sergio, you know, because at the end of that, they give you a damages session. So anyway, that's what I'll do. But if you guys, you know, just a last word, I am a member of the public, and he deceived me.
You're absolutely
With
right.
With some help. So if it's happening to me, it's happening to other people too.
And so maybe the only thing I would suggest,
and
Melissa, you somebody tell me if this is appropriate or not, because I think we have next month we have a long discussion of the use of titles and other things. I'm not saying that we should table it to next month. That maybe we administratively close it, and if we come up with something, some legal advice or other things that change what we think is actionable,
then we can reopen this case. But in the meantime, we would close it instead of dismissing it. Or should we dismiss it? I mean, what do we...
I would somewhat begrudgingly move to dismiss it.
Yeah. I don't see, based on what we have right now in rules and statutes,
yeah,
there's been any violation.
That's okay. Provable.
Right.
But we don't have the evidence in front of us, yeah.
Right. And even if it would be hearsay if we didn't have anything that...
We didn't have evidence.
Yeah. So for those reasons, Mr. Chair, I move to dismiss this.
Okay. We have a motion to dismiss. Is there a second?
I'll second it.
Okay. Any additional discussion? Okay. Let's vote on it. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Nay. We should close it. Mr. Lynch, I appreciate you being here. Sorry about the resolution. I know it's not what you're voting for. Okay.
Who's left? It's here.
We have 7B and 7A.
You got E3.
Oh, yeah, but there's nobody here for that.
Here to talk. Okay.
7B is here.
7B is here. Okay, we'll take 7B.
7A is here.
7A first? Okay. 7A is here too. We'll take 7A. Okay, so this is the case of Christopher DePrima, application for registration as a civil engineer. This is Mr. DePrima is reapplying. His license had been revoked in September of 2017. Do you remember the reason for the revocation, Melissa?
Yes.
Was it aiding and abetting?
It was, yes, and okay. Also he was practicing land surveying registration.
Okay. Okay. Would you please say your name for the record, Mr. DePrima?
Christopher DePrima.
Thank you. Is there anything you'd like to, a statement you'd like to make to the board?
Yeah, I
And Mr. DePrima, you have 3 minutes, which is the standard. Take your time, but we...
Concise.
Yes, sir. Thank you.
Yeah, yeah, I had over 16 years of structural engineering experience, and residential, light commercial. Anyway, I guess the only thing that I had a disagreement with is I didn't say it correctly, but yeah, I do need to be regulated to do that job, and I agree that I do need to be regulated, and I agree to obey all the rules. All the laws, let's see, yeah, then I have to confirm registration again. And, yeah, like I said before, I think there was a big misunderstanding. I don't agree with everything that the consent agreement says. And they took me to court, and I told them that it was null and void because it was signed under duress, and Mr. Madrid said what he said under duress. And we did surveying to do writing and drainage plans. So in addition to structural engineering, actually I kind of got in trouble by doing continuing education. I learned the civil part of doing writing and drainage plans. And it was a very small part of my business, and I think there was conflicting laws, which, like I said, there's a kind of misunderstanding. I got in trouble with conflicting laws because it wasn't, let's see, what was the conflicting law? Yeah, it was a very small part of my business. The guy, Mr. Madrid, didn't even make enough money to pay taxes on it. And so, and plus also, I paid my taxes, and the state law gives immunity for any tax problems. So, and there's no...
Mr. DePrima, any reason why we should reinstate you, or we should grant you licensure?
Yes, because there's no fraud, there's no nothing attacks my skills, no accusations of being incompetent. You should reinstate it. And also, the BTR laws only require one punishment. And the BTR Act also says only one minimum 1 year of revoking your license for the punishment. And I'm ready to go back to work, and I need to go back to work.
I understand that. I appreciate that.
Studied the IRC code. I tried working as a designer for architectural plans. Don't claim to be an architect, but at a certain point, they're going to ask for my license, the PE license, because for residential, I need beams over 20 feet or walls over 10 feet. They're going to say you have to have a PE review the plans. And besides, I'm already competent to do that anyways.
Mr. DePrima, I think our concern was back then was more about your understanding of the statutes and your ability to abide by them, not your technical skill as much.
Well, yeah, yes, sir. That's why I agreed. I need to be regular. I need to obey all the laws, everything, taxes.
But you still think the board made the wrong decision when they revoked your registration, is what I understood earlier on.
Yeah, I disagree. I think it's too harsh. To me, there was kind of a lack of communication. When you get these impasses where people are not communicating, it's really unfair to, the individual is not left out of the, is left out when you can't afford a big, high-priced lawyer. It's just not a fair system. There was no proof of any aiding and abetting. So,
Mr. DePrima, I guess my concern is, you're saying you would need to be regulated, but how do we regulate you if you think the system is unfair and disagree with whatever the board finds? I think for you to be able to be regulated, you would need to understand, the board's authority. And you see my point?
Yes, sir.
Okay.
They can't just have somebody call up and anonymously say, oh, he did something wrong. Well, no, the medical board doesn't take anonymous calls, and neither should we. I was willing to offer the client that blew up on me restitution, but they decided to call and curse me out. But
okay. Thank you, Mr. DePrima.
Yes, sir.
Thank you. I think, are we ready for board discussion on this case?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Can I ask staff, it sounds like we were requesting like a year's worth of portfolio.
We did, right. We asked for a year's worth of experience from last application to this application, just so we could provide that to you to let you know what he's been doing for the past year.
And we didn't get the full year?
We didn't get a full year. We got pushed back at first, and then we got a two-month certificate of experience showing 2 months worth of work.
Which is not confirmed by the...
Yeah, we got page one, not page two, confirmed by who's been working for. So we just thought that would be helpful as well as establish.
Well,
I think the application is incomplete unless we have page two, though. Your certificate of experience, Mr. DePrima, that you provided for 2018?
The employer didn't reply? Is that what you're saying?
I think what we're saying is that we have the first page, which is the part you complete, but I don't think we ever got page two, which is supposed to have the registrant signature and confirmation of your work experience.
I worked for a guy who ran out of work, and I asked him to review that. He's for some reason not cooperating. I don't know what. But I also said I've been studying the IRC code because I was trying to go independent. And I'm also trying to study, I'm trying to do engineering without a license because for some, you know, for some reason they wanted to, I don't know, somebody wants to punish me. But actually, like I said, the BTR statutes only require one punishment, and the BTRX says 1 year minimum suspension. That's, there's only one punishment. I
don't think that's your situation is a revocation, not a suspension, which is different.
Well, I worked for a guy for 2 months. I did learn a little bit, mostly residential, some light commercial. I've already got 16 years experience. I don't see the reason to throw it all away.
Why wouldn't he verify you, confirm your employment?
Huh?
Why wouldn't your employer confirm your 2 months of employment with him?
Why wouldn't he?
Yeah, we didn't get.
Why hasn't he, or why haven't we gotten it?
He doesn't communicate. I think he has mental health issues. I think he's suicidal. He has two employees, so he's going to groups sort of. But I don't know what his problem is. I'm disappointed that he doesn't. Here, I got a job offer. If the government goes back in business, BP&B offered me a job to do structural engineering for the Navy at Norfolk, Virginia. They want me.
Move to Virginia, get your license.
But, I didn't have any problem with the last administration here, and I don't see any reason to throw away 16 years of experience plus my education.
All right.
I'm just trying to go back to work.
I understand, Mr. Dupree. I think on our end, I hope you understand, revoking somebody is a very difficult decision. We made it because we could not communicate with you, as you said, and today you're starting out, we have an incomplete application. You're starting out by saying that the person you're working for has mental health issues, and that's why he won't certify your experience.
You could ask him to. I don't know why he doesn't respond.
I guess my point is I'm not comfortable acting on it if that's not there. Rob, is that something we can call the employer and request?
We can follow up with the employer.
I appreciate that.
I also don't know that certificate of experience is necessary for the complete application. We like to get that, especially in this case, to show that he's been steadily employed or doing civil engineering or structural or for the past year, so that was something that we thought would benefit the board and benefit him actually having that in his application.
I think it would be beneficial. It would also be beneficial to talk to the employer just to understand Mr. DePrima's performance.
Also, I did work on a plan, and I thought it was, I did an IRC prescriptive method, which doesn't require a seal, and I got the plan review back, and I did the plan review. But there's some things that they want a seal for. I guess I could show you the work if you want, plan review. But I made sure I did that to be complete that they had a contract, and I had to honor that contract. The civil part, I can't do the grading drain. They did a plot plan for them. They said if it was within the setbacks, I wouldn't need, they wouldn't need a grading and drainage plan.
Okay, Mr. Dupree, I'll ask the board, what do we want to do today?
I don't think we have enough information for me to feel comfortable granting the license.
I don't, certainly not. I would, Mr. Chair, I'd like to make a motion that we deny the application for registration. Mr. Dupree.
Okay.
Also add that.
Wait, Mr. Dupree, please, just one minute. We'll get back to you. So we have a motion to deny, and do we have a second?
I'll second that.
We have a motion and a second. Mr. Jones, is there any, do you want to explain your motion or you just want to let it stand as is?
Stand as is.
Okay, Mr. DePrima, do you want to say anything? Oh, Mr. Donald?
The board should enunciate for the record the basis for the denial of the application. Whether the application is incomplete or
Mr. Donald is saying that we have to explain why we're denying the license. Whether
incomplete
it's
application. Yeah.
Do you feel that the applicant successfully demonstrated his good moral character and capability to practice safely?
No, I do not.
Okay. So those are the rationale for your motion.
Well, I might also add that the state bar says it was conflicting laws, and I guess I didn't show up at that meeting, but, you know, it's not fair when somebody's just trying to throw conflicting laws at me. You have to have no witness to have. Also, this aiding and abetting, I've learned, every step of aiding and abetting has to be proved before they can say.
Okay, Mr. Dupree, my wig. Okay. Let's, I suggest we vote on this motion, because I don't think new information is not coming up at this point. So, all in favor of the motion?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
Nay.
Okay. Mr. Dupree, your application at this point is denied.
Could they ask the last employer to sign that form, fill out the review for me?
I'm concerned about board staff getting into the business of completing applications for applicants. If we do it for one applicant, then it would be difficult to explain why we did not continue to do it.
Yeah, right. I think it's the applicant's responsibility to provide a completed application. So
if they have questions, they can call. But
yes.
Sure.
Yes.
It's supposed to be for more than 2 months, isn't it?
Yes.
Okay. Okay. Thank you, Mr. DePrima. We will move to agenda item 7B. Brett Thorne, application for registration as architect. Mr. Thorne applied for registration in December of 2018. He has a consent agreement in May of last year in response to a case. When he had used the same architecture and architect and reports that he prepared in Arizona, although he was not licensed in Arizona at the time, he does have a bachelor's in architecture from Cal Poly, the real Cal Poly, and has been a registered architect, right? That's what people say. Has been a registered architect in California since 2010. So staff is asking if we should grant license to Mr. Thorne. I don't see any. I mean, he made a mistake. He signed the consent. He did what he had to do. I have no issue personally.
I don't either.
No.
So do we have a motion?
Mr. Chair, I make a motion that we approve Mr. Thorne's application for registration as an architect.
Okay.
Second.
We have a motion. Do we have a second?
Yes, second.
Thank you. All in favor of the motion?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Good luck, Mr. Thorne.
Jason.
Congratulations.
Your time.
Thank you for sitting in the room.
Yes.
Thank you.
Is anybody left?
Okay. There's a lot left.
Anybody. No people.
Oh, anybody left. Anybody?
People.
Just which cases, sir?
Edward Robles.
Robles.
Do we consent it?
Mr. Robles, we consented yours. We accepted your signature. You already signed, so we agreed, and we're good to go.
We're good to go, sir.
Yes.
You're released.
Thank you, sir. And was there somebody else I saw? What's your last name, sir?
Yeah.
6F4. We have not taken that one.
Okay.
Right?
Correct. That's correct.
Six,
1, 2, 3, or 4.
Okay. So we will do agenda item 6F4, Robert Bauer, certified home inspector. He's certifications 60983 on probation for failure to comply with a board order. Let's see. Mr. Hunt, do you want to summarize where we're at with this case?
Where we're at this point?
Yes. So this is failure to comply with a board order. And I know we've already revised the consent to reduce the penalty from $1,000 to $500 and remove remedial training.
Yeah, so he did sign that. He just failed to comply with any of those terms within the time frame specified. So then we opened a compliance case, notified him, in which he responded. He did not respond to, but he did pay his penalty and cost in December.
So what we're missing is the peer reviews?
We're still missing the peer reviews. So he's in violation of the previous board order, and then we need closure on this specific compliance case. So there's two items that we're recommending. He was contacted when he failed to pay the administrative or one of the fines, I don't remember which. We discussed that. We were going to give him time to pay that. He refused. And then he failed to pay that and then failed to pay the other fee as well.
Okay, and what's the reason, Mr. Bauer, for not having completed the peer reviews?
I am still doing the peer reviews. I have two done. I'm working with Peter Leeds.
Okay.
But if we back up, back in August, I was here. I had left a message for Mr. Hunt. He was off that day. When I didn't hear from him, I came down. I spoke with Sean. He told me that Jeff was not in, that he would talk to him. He could push out my time frame. I did not hear from Jeff until October 2nd, which was after the administrative penalty. I had check in hand on 8:30. Matter of fact, it's the same check I used to pay this in December. I had a conversation with Jeff. It didn't go well. I asked for his superior. He gave me Doug's number, his email. I reached out to Doug in December. Doug told me what I needed to do. I did it the very next day. So I paid my administrative penalty, the cost of investigation, my licensing, and my firm. I then seeked out a peer review. I reached out to the home inspectors I knew. Not all of them do it. Peter Leeds was a contact that was given to me through a home inspector that I did through my parallels. As I say, I have two done here. If you would like a copy of these.
So how come you haven't done them? Have you not done any more inspections since April when you signed the agreement?
I'm under the impression that I'm not allowed to. The conversation I had had with Jeff on October 2nd did not, as I mentioned, did not go well. I spoke with my wife that evening. I sent an email back to Jeff on the 3rd. My licensing is due, renewal was due on October 16th. I had mentioned to him at that time, we're probably not going to renew. I let it lapse.
So you haven't done any more than the two inspections?
These were just done recently with...
But you haven't done any more since April of last year? Okay.
No. Based on the documentation I received, I'm thinking I was under probation, where I was not able to do those.
Well, probation, you can still work. If you were suspended, you could not do them.
Okay. Well, I would like to not be suspended. And like I say, everything is current. I'm in the process of doing my... I have one more. Actually, they would have all been done, but, you know, I'm at the mercy of Mr. Leeds' contacts and his schedule. And...
So let me suggest, Mr. Bauer, that really our goal here would be, you know, for you to comply with the peer review and close this case. I mean, is it possible, and Mr. Hunt, I'm going to need to ask you as well, I mean, would it satisfy the requirements if he, because we could table this case until next month, and if he hasn't completed all the items, I would be inclined to suspend his license. But if he's completed all the items for the next month, does that help, or are you still concerned about his cooperation?
That's up to you, Mr. Chairman. We've given him ample time. He had, to go back to the consent agreement, 30 days to pay his cost investigation. He had 60 days to pay his administrative penalty. I contacted him a month after his cost was due and let him know that his administrative penalty was coming due. If he did not pay the cost, he would be forced to open a compliance case for failure to comply. Still didn't comply. The administrative time frame came and went. Still didn't comply. We opened the case. He had 3 months to do his peer reviews. He signed in July, end of July.
Yeah.
That should have been prior to Thanksgiving, that all of this should have been done. When I spoke with him in October, he asked if he could come in the next morning. I said, you have till, you know, we close the office at 5, you want to come in and pay today. He couldn't, which is fine.
To come the next morning?
The next morning. Then I received the email saying that he was not going to do it, that they weren't going to renew, stop doing home inspections. Didn't hear back from him until December. He didn't respond to the notice of the new case. Called Mr. Parlin, came in and paid in December.
I would like to note, part of the order does require you to renew your registration.
Correct. I actually, on the in October, after I had sent the email to Jeff, I sent, it looks like it was received by you on October 5th for inactivation, and I was sent back a note saying it couldn't be inactive because of the case pending. So at that time, we tabled it, and I were going to probably not.
Mr. Chair, if I could go back, when the case was originally heard, I mean, the issues that existed in his home inspection report were numerous, probably the most that we've seen in a home inspection report. He came back to be revisited, he knocked it down again, came back, knocked it down again. He's had ample time to comply with this. We give him another month. I think that is setting a precedent for other cases for non-compliance. That I don't have to do what the board tells me to do. They can do whatever I want, when I want. And that, unfortunately, is what Mr. Bauer's position is presented to us today. And has been since I've been trying to communicate in October.
Okay. Thank
you. Our recommendation still stands, that we suspend his license for failure to comply. And we offer him a consent agreement. Suspend his license, but you comply with the board order HI-18-011. And that we offer a consent agreement to settle this new compliance case.
Okay, and so we would be offering suspension. Can he complete his peer reviews while in suspension?
He's well past the opportunity, in my opinion. We gave him, I would have given him extension. I mean, he had 3 months to do the peer reviews. He wanted to go inactive. That was his position. And then it was denied, and all of a sudden he wants to do the peer reviews. He just said that he just recently did them. Well, where is the time frame when he contacted Mr. Parlin to now to do those peer reviews?
The suspension is 3 months. Or at least that's what it was in the order. Perhaps he could schedule a home inspection when the suspension is over to complete peer reviews.
I'm looking at you guys. I see both sides of the argument. I can see how frustrating it can be for Mr. Hunt if Mr. Bauer is not cooperative.
Well,
because I think I realize that there might have been some misunderstandings from your end in some areas, but it's just way too many misunderstandings on, you know, ability to do work, on not showing up the next morning when you said you were going to be here.
Reached out to him in an email, and he was providing me with Mr. Parlin's information. My question was, on the agreement, when I was here in August, on August 30th, to pay to do the first part of those requirements, the only thing that would have been lacking would have been the peer reviews, which I would have done. I never heard back from Jeff until the 2nd of October. I didn't hear from him at all in September.
There, Mr. Chairman, I don't want to be combative by any means. It was not announced to me that he was here. There was no note left. If he had the check in hand, why not pay it then? That was my question in October. You brought it in. It's not staff's responsibility to communicate your request or confusion. It can incumbent upon you to contact me if you had questions about the consent agreement and if you can extend things. I contacted him when he was beyond the time frame of the cost investigation to be paid. That's our process. That's our policy. I will contact him. Where is it at? Come bring it in tomorrow. Also, your administrative penalty is coming due next week. We need to pay that as well. So it's not incumbent upon staff if someone drops by. I mean, it's a nice thing if they did. But it's incumbent upon the registrant to contact me if there's questions or disputes or concerns. That was communicated to Mr. Bauer. He didn't like what I had to say. I understand. But that's the way it is. It's our policy. It's our process. That's how we handle it.
Okay.
To extend it any longer...
Mr. Poland?
Well, if we suspended the license, since it's not a fee-paid home inspection that he's engaged in, it's Peter Leeds' inspection. He's just there to do a parallel, essentially a parallel with him. I think he could do that. He doesn't need a license for that to occur. And once he satisfies the term, he'll be in the suspension.
Okay. So what you're suggesting is a 3-month suspension and the requirement to complete his original parallel inspections with Peter Leeds, administrative penalty, cost of investigation, and that would be our consent agreement. Is that correct? Or am I misunderstanding?
The suspension, the way that I understand the suspension, we lift the stay that's right. Made from the other order to suspend okay. him for 3 months. He can still do his parallels, but his suspension's for 3 months. A new consent agreement for this case specifically with a letter of reprimand, admin penalty of $500, and the cost investigation.
That suspension is that, Ms. Powell, is that your recommendation as well?
Yes, and so once he satisfies the peer review, then we will essentially be able to close the first, the original case. And your action today on the second case, we're proposing this consent agreement.
Okay. So is anybody... able to make a motion to that effect? I think what we're acting on is lifting the state suspension and enacting a 3-month suspension. All the other terms of that consent agreement are still active, including the 3 parallel inspections. And then we are going to offer him another consent to pay a $500 penalty and cost of investigation.
To settle the
lack of compliance. And is there no letter of reprimand on that additional consent?
Yeah, there is.
Yeah, there is.
Okay.
Yeah.
So is anybody making that motion?
Yeah, I'll make the motion. Mr. Chair, I move that we lift the stay of suspension on the first matter, enact a 3-month suspension, okay. maintaining the original requirements of the signed consent agreement. I wonder if we should just do that first.
Okay. So that's regarding the first issue. Motion is to lift the suspension and enact a 3-month suspension, maintain all other requirements. Is there a second? I'll second. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Opposed? Okay.
And then, Mr. Chair, I will move that we offer the consent agreement proposed by staff, which consists of a letter of reprimand, administrative penalty in the amount of $500, cost of investigation in the amount of $154 if not signed within 30 days. Proceed to hearing.
Okay. Do we have a second for that motion?
A second.
A motion and a second. All in favor?
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Okay. Thank you, Mr. Bauer.
Thank you.
Appreciate your time. If you have any questions about what this means, please check with Mr. Parlin or Mr. Hunt.
Yeah.
Thank you. Okay. I really need to go now. I apologize.
Go.
Go to Tucson. I have a meeting at 3:30.
You're leaving.
Yeah.
I have to head towards Yuma. There.
We have 5 left.
Do we know if this is... Okay.
Okay, so we have 5 left. Two members leaving.
Let's roll.
Thank you.
Let's go, JFU.
You want this? Just so everything that has a check mark has been done.
just fading away here.
I know. E3?
I'll leave you with the easy ones.
What's the next one?
Okay. Our next case looks like it's 6E3. Is that correct, Andrew?
That looks like the next one that we haven't...
Okay, 6E3, case number HI-19027 for David Peters. And this is complaints requiring board guidance. I'll open it up here. Okay, we have a prior board action, which resulted in a letter of reprimand, state suspension, probation, remedial training, restitution in the amount of $275, administrative penalty $500, and cost of investigation for $563.
Yep.
And Ms. Luera, what is the concern here?
So we received a second complaint from the same alleger from the first complaint, stating that the respondent did a home inspection for them while his respondent firm was in expired status. So they are seeking restitution or a refund for that inspection. Correct. This is a new complaint.
So the prior information is just
different,
FYI.
Different complaint, different property. He did two home inspections for them. This is the first one. The ledger did not purchase this home, so they did the second. They did a second inspection, which was related to HI-18032, which he signed that consent agreement, which he's currently complying with.
So he's in compliance. There was a home inspection done during the questionable time, and the owners want a refund, I assume because they think it's null and void?
So for the first home inspection, for HI-18032, they filed the complaint with the board based on the home inspection, the standards of care. The board found, he went into a consent agreement based on standards of professional conduct, and then for the respondent firm, which was an expired status.
But in his first consent agreement, part of the discipline action was lack of firm registration.
Correct.
Okay.
And so he's complying with that consent agreement.
Okay. And the restitution in the first one would have been because there was obviously flaws in the home inspection report.
Correct.
This case, they just want their money back because of the firm register. He's already been disciplined for that. So.
And they have no problem with the substance.
They have no problem with the substance of the first home inspection. The respondent did reach out to me saying he would not attend the home inspection, the board meeting, but is willing to refund the inspection fee for this one.
My inclination is to dismiss it. I mean, he was already, you know, disciplined for the first time for not having firm registration. The restitution is because the home inspection report he did was faulty. You know, I don't think this, you know, they're entitled to restitution just because he wasn't firm registered. You know, his firm wasn't registered. That wouldn't have been the reason. Okay, had the first case came, let's look at it this way. Had the first case came up and the home inspection report was perfect, the only thing was the firm registration wasn't active, we wouldn't have disciplined with restitution to the homeowner. So why would we this time?
He's willing to refund them.
If he wants to have the goodness of his heart do it, whatever.
Yeah.
But I don't think the board order should be that way.
I think I agree with you. We just dismiss.
Yeah. I'll make a motion to dismiss.
Second.
We've got a motion and second to dismiss case 6E3. Any further discussion? All in favor to dismiss?
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? That concludes 6E3. Bear with me as I...
6F1.
We're looking at 6F1. Okay, Mr. Hunt, the case is 6F1, AL19003. The respondent is Amber Davidson. Synopsis of the complaint. Respondent has failed to comply with the terms of board order AL17004. Respondent has not paid her administrative penalty as specified in the order. The administrative penalty was $3,000 payable in 12 months. Mr. Hunt, has she paid the cost of investigation?
Yeah, she was quick to pay that. She's actually complying with her monthly payments, and then they stopped. So I've tried reaching out to her multiple occasions through email and phone, three different phone numbers. Never heard anything. So it came due, her amount was came due, and we opened a compliance case. Required to comply, she did submit a written statement explaining that the firm is expired and she's no longer going to be an alarm controlling person. They're not going to be practicing anymore, and wanted to know if she could make a final payment of $250 to satisfy the $1,250 that she still owes.
Okay. So if she pays that, she's short $1,000.
Correct.
But then her license will be...
It's already expired.
Right, so we'll just never renew it.
I'd say take the money.
She has no intention of doing it anymore.
Yeah.
It's got to be too much hassle, as you can imagine.
So phone numbers even work when you call?
No. Well, they work,
so
but...
Would that be an administrative close? I mean, how would you do that?
Well, we have a second complaint now, right? It's her failure to comply with the case from 2017 and now the non-compliance case. Okay, so...
And once again, she has the clause. She can't choose not to renew while she's on probation to make it go away. So that's another violation.
But she's not practicing. She's not doing any of this anymore.
Correct.
So she says.
No, it's expired.
Yeah. So
but her license are expired. Her firm's expired.
So you could offer her a consent to a voluntary surrender and include the $250 offer in there and write off the $1,000 and close the new complaint with a...
In the original.
Right, to a voluntary surrender for, and, you know, use both case numbers at the top. And then they're both closed if she pays $250 and...
Voluntarily surrenders
this certificate. Right.
Just close it, she can turn around, apply for the BOR agent tomorrow, and there'll be no cause to deny her.
Right. So I'll make a motion that we offer her a consent agreement under both open matters to voluntarily surrender her certificate, pay the final $250, and once she does that, we'll close both.
Correct. Mm-hmm. Work.
Do we have to even say, if not signed within 30 days? I don't...
Probably not.
Yeah.
It will just go on the hearing list if she doesn't.
Okay, fair enough. So that's my motion.
I'll second.
We've got a motion and a second. Any further discussion?
No, sir.
Hearing none, all in favor?
Aye. Aye.
Any opposed? None. That concludes case 6F1. 6F2, case P19019, Michael Bostick, registered geologist, suspended.
Stephen Womany.
6F2.
It's one case a year.
Not even here. He missed it.
And we have Mr. Hunt.
Stand on his big moment.
Yep. You guys gone dark?
Yeah, apparently. I mean, even when Mr. Kramer had him at the regular investigation and went to hearings, you guys ordered him to do things, never did. Everything we sent to him was returned, the addresses that we have. emails, we never get phone calls in return, no response. And that goes back to when it was under investigation. There was one instance of communication with Mr. Kramer. So at this point, I just actually got back my notices for this board meeting on Friday. So the ones that I sent out.
Mr.
Chair. So our recommendation is formal hearing for revocation.
Sounds good to me. Okay, Mr. Chairman, I'll move that we accept staff's recommendation and move this case to formal hearing for revocation of respondent's registration.
Second.
We have a motion and a second. Any further discussion? Hearing none, all in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? None opposed. That concludes and case 6F2.
And then the hearing, maximum 5 minutes.
Moving on to case 6F3, Mr. Jones. John Davis, RLS. And again, we have Mr. Hunt as the investigator. The complaint is the respondent has failed to comply with the terms of board order B-16-047. Respondent has not paid his administrative penalty and has not completed his peer reviews specified in the order. Staff recommendation?
Board guidance. So this is Mr. Davis is an elderly gentleman, poor health, older case, of course. Been in communication with him. His claim is that he has paid everything. Our records show that he has not. He owes $297. There's a payment he claims he made of $300. It's not in our records, and he can't provide any records of it. But that's what he holds to. The peer reviews, that's another convoluted thing. The gentleman he had as the peer reviewer stated that at one point he never got anything from Mr. Davis. Mr. Davis said, well, I did. I gave them to Eric Naw, who provided them to Mr. Powell, who was the peer reviewer. The peer reviewer finally did say, yeah, I did look at them, reviewed them, gave them back to the person who gave them to me, which was not Mr. Davis. And then that person, the go-between, Mr. Naw, passed away somewhere in that time frame.
Jesus.
So whether there were any surveys done or any reviews actually performed, I couldn't tell you. Mr. Naw actually had been disciplined by our board for a while ago, heavily actually. And then my opinion is that Mr. Davis didn't actually do the surveys. It was Mr. Naw. Because Mr. Davis, you know, he's not able to go out in the field. He never saw the surveys, what he stated to me. That's where it sits. He owes money. No peer reviews.
Jeff, did you ask him if he would voluntarily surrender?
I did.
Yeah.
He did not. I mean, he didn't say he would, didn't say he wouldn't. Okay. It's so probably a situation that he might, that'd be better served if he would, if he did do that.
So our option on this, what? Right now, we could lift the stay and suspend right now.
Yeah.
And then either formal hearing to revoke or consent agreement for
voluntary surrender.
So maybe a voluntary surrender, consent agreement if not signed within 30 days, formal hearing to revoke.
Yeah.
Motion.
Agree. Second.
Let's make sure Kirk gets that. Kirk, do you have that?
So the motion's going to be to immediately lift his stay and suspend license 26410, Mr. Davis, offer consent agreement for voluntary surrender of his license. If not signed within 30 days, proceed to formal hearing for revocation.
Okay, that's our motion and second. Any further discussion? Hearing none. All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? None. That concludes case 6F3, and we did 6F4. I have G1 next. And we have Investigator Luera. The synopsis of the complaint is that We received a complaint in July of 2018. Respondent tested for leaks in the water supply valves to the washer and incorrectly reattached cold water line, causing the pressurized line to disconnect and cause some damage. It is further alleged the respondent firm engaged in home inspection July 10th, 2018 with expired registration, firm registration with the board, and firm registration's expired. Ms. Laura, why? What are we here for this? Why are we?
So staff's recommendation is to administer and close this case because the home inspection certification has been revoked due to lack of financial assurance. So he moved out of state. He's no longer here. We were going to do a EAC meeting for the case, but due to his no license certification anymore, we asked that the board administer and close this due to that, and if he ever comes back and reapplies and is granted that certification again, we would reopen and continue the investigation.
Sounds reasonable.
Yep.
Mr.
Chair, need a motion?
I'll make a motion to administratively close H19006.
Second.
HI19, sorry.
Okay, we have a motion and a second to administratively close. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? Hearing none, that concludes 6G1. 6H1 we have taken care of. Licensing matters, I believe we took care of those. And 7, licensing consent agenda in item 8. A1 is to be canceled.
Did you put Mr. Jones on the list this year?
Not yet.
I actually looked. I was looking for Carmen's name.
Okay. So we just need you to vote on the canceled.
Wow.
There's a lot.
There's a lot.
Wow.
A lot of engineers. Yeah.
Mr. Chair, I'll make a motion to cancel registrations and certifications that have been expired for one full renewal period as shown in 8A1.
Second. We have a motion and a second. Any discussion? Hearing none. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Any opposed?
Seem to have gone mute.
None. That concludes item AA1.
Mr. Vice Chair, I vote, or I ask, that you just table the policy items till next month. Unless there's one that you particularly want to take up, but...
All of item 9?
Yeah, unless, like I said. And then you have my written director's report, unless there are any questions. The only thing I would ask is that you let me know if any of you want to go to the NCARB or NCWS regional meetings that are coming up. Those deadlines are early in February. I take that Neil does not want to go to NCARB in Nashville. Do you want to go?
No. That's the NCARB.
It's in early March of 2019. And Andy, they will pay for you to go.
Yeah. How early?
No,
I'd go to see Matt.
Yeah, I'm not going. I have it as
7 through 10.
Yeah, 7 through 10.
So I have a 2-week trial in beautiful El Centro, but not till the 19th. But if it doesn't go, when you said the 7th through the
10th,
you could actually fly home the 9th, depending on.
Are we on, what item are we on here?
13C.
Right. 13C, okay. I'm sorry.
Ed's going to touch base with me maybe in...
How soon?
Like 2 weeks? Is that too late?
We can send your name in and then if we have to cancel, we can do that.
Okay. Okay.
All right, that's cool.
I would actually like to hear something on 9B.
We'll make your hotel reservation.
9B.
If I can do it, I'll stay.
Quick little... things. The one is the legislation, and the other one is the computer disaster. I mean computer issues.
Yeah.
Is there anything else that requires a vote?
No.
Okay. Mr. Vice Chair, I'm leaving.
Well, then okay. We all have to leave.
Yeah, then we're done. So, do you want to go to NCAA?
Can't have discussion.
Yes, I'd like to go to that.
Not even discussion.
And that's in,
I think that's in May, you said.
National.
Can't even listen. D.C.
In mid-May.
I can call you word.
And I'm writing Jay for down.
I can still call you word.
Okay, Jay, you're going to go to
Boise?
When is it?
Mid-May.
I might have a conflict on that.
You might? Okay.
Boise.
I'll talk to you after this.
You want to go?
Don't hate me for this.
Yeah, so far.
Nope. Pay me later.
Could never happen. Never happen.
Okay, we have lost our quorum, so we're going to adjourn.
When is it, do you know? You don't
Meeting's adjourned at 1:33.